The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Karen, thank you so much for joining us. The backdrop looks great.
Okay.
How are you, sister?
little curtain effect, a little drama there.
So. You've been busy. How have you been?
I have been really busy, yeah. Yeah, I joke saying I need a clone, but I don't want a clone. That's a bad joke now. So
I'm looking forward to this podcast. I listened to you speak with Dave from the X22 report and thought it was a wonderful, beautiful conversation that the two of you had. And I reached out to Dave to connect with you because I couldn't find how to connect with you. And he was gracious enough to connect me. And I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing. And it's been a huge few years, and I'd love to tap into your backstory about how you got into this position where you can start, where you're speaking about probably the most important topic in human history ever. I would say, or maybe you agree with that, maybe you don't agree with that, but I'd love to know your background and how you became qualified or unqualified to talk about what you're talking about.
Qualifications or credibility is an interesting concept because as a communications expert, right, I used to train big companies, you know, Pfizer and J&J, on the principles of communication, relevance, credibility, and impact. And typically credibility is based on two criteria, especially in the medical community. It's based on your degree, right? Whether or not you have a PhD or an MD. And then it's also based on your popularity. So how many papers have you published? How many shows have you been on and things like that? So that's what credibility is. And when you have a certain level of credibility, you automatically have trust, and then you can opine. So you can give your opinion, and your opinion is as good as any fact because you've established that credibility. So unfortunately, I don't have that. I guess now I've been on some shows, but I don't have the degrees or, and I certainly, you know, no one knew who I was because my work is primarily behind the scenes in the pharma, biotech, and med device industry. So my background is I have 25 years experience in the industry. I did start off in sales at Pfizer, and then I went straight over to the marketing communication side, working on some of the bigger brands. People probably heard of Viagra, Norvasc, Lipitor, Celebrex. I've also worked on other brands outside of Pfizer. And then I worked for Allergan on the West Coast, and I started my own firm and consulting agency. So I had my own firm for a few years where I did have PhDs work for me and CGI editors and MBAs. And you know, for a good portion of my career, my job was to take the data in peer-reviewed publications, as well as what's filed with the FDA, specifically the phase three data. And we would simplify that and put it into educational materials and charts and graphs so it would be easy for the physicians to understand it. And then we would do another level of editing so it would be easy for people like you and me, everyday people, to understand it. So that's what my background is. And then over the years, because I ran my own agency, I've been a senior vice president, I'm a clinical writer as well. I got the reputation of being the cleaner. And so when I just went into consulting work, there's like an expression in the industry, they're like, call Karen, she'll fix it. So when a company marketing team went rogue and was making claims that they were not compliant with the legal environment, you know, and the regulatory environment, and they would really go completely rogue, then they're at risk for fines, you know, up to $500 million or more. I would come in and go through all of their FDA filings, go through all their publications, all their current promotional materials, and turn the situation around, basically. So I also joke too, part of my job, I say I read because my clients don't want to. So that's a big part of what I do.
I like that. The cleaner, cleaner. Pulp Fiction calling it Harvey Keitel, the wolf, he'll fix it up for us.
That's what people, the wolf, exactly. But I mean, it's funny. I mean, I used to, when I was a consultant for one firm, I'm terrible. I used to like mess with people and make meetings with them at 4 p.m. on Friday, you know, and I was like, don't worry, I'm not going to fire you. So I was like, all right, it was bad. But, you know, I think what people don't understand is, you know, the data, like, for example, the phase three data that's submitted to that Pfizer submitted, or, you know, every company submits this data. And you know, they tell the FDA, just look at these charts and graphs and don't read the fine detail. But when you're creating the educational materials for the physicians, you know, you read the charts and graphs and you turn them into pretty, you know, pretty charts and graphs. But then you have to read the fine details because that's where you get the fair balance. You know, that's where you find out, like in the phase three trial for Pfizer, that a teenager fell over and fractured his or her face. Like, people probably don't know that. That's in the fine details, right? You know, you find out 409 people came down with severe COVID-19 disease within 1 week of the first or second shot. That's in the fine details of the filings. And when I had downloaded that in the initial new drug application, less than 200 people had read the phase three data out of 7.5 billion people around the globe. And less than 100 had read the initial new drug application, which had the very bizarre, you know, quarantine strategies for women of childbearing potential. So these are things that, you know, doctors don't normally read, and you can't expect them to sit down and read through those documents and all the and thousands of pages, right? And then they're busy, you know, seeing patients and treating patients. So they hire PhDs and editors and medical education agencies and strategists to do this for them. The pharma companies do, basically.
So your role was basically communicating to the doctors and then setting out a framework so that the public could understand what these pharmaceutical companies were producing over the years.
Yeah, that's a big part of what I did. And then also, though, you know, it was also telling the pharmaceutical companies what markets to target, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was a big part of launching, you know, a lot of times companies will have a first line therapy, a primary therapy, whether it's for cholesterol or blood pressure or, you know, diabetes, and then they'll want to add on another therapy. So believe it or not, companies, when they had two therapies, they try to both compete for the first position. Well, you have to do market segmentation and define the audience that you're going after and why you know, this product is better first line for this group and first line for this group, or do a second. So there's a lot of what I did. I mean, it's a lot of it's strategy too. So what's the best approach to capture the most market share in the shortest amount of time? Things like that too.
It's like a game of chess. And then the other part of it was going in there to defend the pharmaceutical companies if there was potential abnormalities or problems that arose from their data, their clinical data. Is that what?
Well,
I
didn't defend them, because if they broke the law, they broke the law. I would go in and say, stop it, cut it out. This is what you need to do so that you don't get into hot water, right? You know, there's no, That was more or less what I would do. And then, I mean, then there'd be companies too where a big competitor like a Pfizer would just be making impossible for them to gain market share. There was just a barrage of attacks regarding a product safety, you know. And I was like, well, if you look at Pfizer's documentation, they weren't fully honest and didn't fully disclose all the information in their phase three trial. So we can bring that information forward, you know, to go on the offense. And the truth is, in our industry, in the pharma industry, the FDA doesn't police the industry. We tattletale on each other. So, you know, if a company is being too much of a pain in the butt to a company, you can go and find usually within their FDA filings and stuff, really damning information. And then you just need to have a doctor send it in and say, oh, I'm concerned about this information. Next thing you know, your competitor's got to put a black box warning on, or they got to do liver function tests, or their product gets recalled, which is what happened with Posicor, which was a T cell blocker for anyway. So there's a lot of things that I know in the industry, you know, because I read the data. I mean, it's not people like, where does she get her information from? I get it from public websites. I just happen to know what websites to go to, and I happen to know how to search certain government databases. I believe I was the first person that exposed the NIH database for the government grants. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember I was speaking to one attorney because I was showing them all the grants that Fauci wrote to himself, $52 million to patent HIV glycoprotein 120. And they're like, how did you find this information? I was like, you just go to the database and under advanced search, you enter Fauci. Like, it's like literally all you just have to know where these databases are. So it's not, I don't think what I do is difficult. I think it's just time consuming, and I enjoy it. I've always, since I was a child, I've used to read microfiche at the library. So I just enjoy reading this type of information.
Well, we're glad that you do. And before we get into COVID and the vaccine or the shot, what was your thoughts about Big Pharma when you were in studying this and working in that field? I'm curious as to, did it change over the years that you worked in the industry from... Yeah. Did you always have trust in the industry, and then did that slowly change when you started to see things, or do you still have trust in the industry? Like, I just want to get a perception.
Oh, no. I have no trust in the industry anymore. The industry died in 2019. It was DOA, right? Pfizer's Q4 2019 revenues were less than $2 billion for that Q4. It was over. Not until COVID-19 came around did they resurrect not just Pfizer, but you know, J&J, Sanofi, GlaxoSmithKline, they're all in on this mRNA, you know, and Moderna's there too. So the industry was over. It had served its purpose. Its purpose had probably ended somewhere in early 2000s.
Can you explain that a little bit more for people that are not grasping exactly what you mean by it was over? Give us a chronological order or timeline of the demise of Big Pharma, as you just mentioned, up until 2019.
So I can speak more towards the history of Pfizer, but it does talk to all of pharma. But, you know, Pfizer emerged strong on the scene during or right after World War II because they figured out how to mass manufacture penicillin, you know, and so that was used to treat the soldiers in World War II. And so, you know, pretty much almost 80 year run, the pharmaceutical companies had what we call palliative treatment. So they were treating symptoms of acute, you know, conditions such as bacterial infections or viral infections, or chronic conditions, or what they're calling chronic, like blood pressure and cholesterol, right? And these products, you know, or acute like pain management. And a lot of the products were derived, synthetically recreated and derived from what's found in nature. So penicillin, we know, is from mold. People don't know this, but statins to lower cholesterol are actually from a substance that was found through fermented rice, you know. So a lot of the painkillers come from venoms and toxins, believe it or not, like from some snails and things like that.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.